live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to share with you a letter I've written to Pope Francis, because I believe that more than any other person on the planet, he, right now, is capable of saving the planet one meal at a time. This letter is reprinted up on my website, nprn.fm and progressiveradionetwork.com. And those of you who are of the Catholic faith and have respect for this man, you might want to remind him that this is a very practical way of dealing with a lot of the suffering that he has to face and look at. Also today, we're going to have a commentary from Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report on both major parties are plagues on humanity. I will be doing a special commentary on the Greek debt and what you're not being told. Who's really responsible for it? How much money did the Greeks actually receive? A tiny fraction of what they owe. Also today, from Dr. Laura Miller, how addiction is not a disease, something we've been saying for a long time. A neuroscientist argues that it's time to change our minds on the roots of substance abuse. And this psychologist and former addict insists that the illness model for addiction is wrong and dangerously so. Plus today, we'll look at, quote, I think America is out of hand, the shocking numbers that reveal just how burnt out American workers are. From Matt Sicardo, productivity has exploded in the American workforce in recent years, but at a terrible cost. How the rich and famous, they don't care about you, but you should care about you, and we'll get to that. Also, an emergency survey underway along the West Coast, marine life being affected, quote, in ways never seen before. From CBS, quote, unusual increase in dolphin, sea lion, and seabird deaths. Thought to be the largest toxic bloom anywhere ever in history. Wow, some of the remarkable environmental events that are happening. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. Let's begin. As I mentioned yesterday, is your paleo diet making you irritable, depressed, and sleep-deprived? Well, according to the latest research from Natural News, the answer is yes. Struggling with mood swings and anxiety and brain fog and fatigue? Well, if so, you may be GABA compromised, gamma-aminobutyric acid. It's an important neurotransmitter, and it contributes to our overall sense of well-being. Well, GABA's production can become severely disrupted by chronic stress and during the dark winter months. And your gut flora becomes imbalanced. And environmental pollutants and pharmaceutical drug use are also associated with lowered levels. Those on a paleo diet may suffer from insufficient GABA too. And while promoting neurotransmitter equilibrium can be an exercise of trial and error, several methods are available which show promise in promoting mood stability and brain health. And one of the first steps is to forgo our energy kick in a country. And what is it? It's caffeine, it's refined sugar, it's soft drinks, it's excessive carbohydrates, all of which wreak havoc on the delicate brain chemistry. Instead, I suggest you focus upon certain nutrients plus power walking. There's nothing more you could do, in my knowledge, that would get you started on a day with a better mood than simply to go out and do an hour power walk. Because in that power walk, you're stimulating microcirculation to the brain, you're helping the liver and the kidneys cleanse debris out of the body, you're helping to maintain a better fat-burning quality, you're also raising your pulse rate in order to keep it lower. So it speeds up when you're exercising, but then it slows down. And let's say your resting pulse right now is 80 or 75. If you were to lower that 10 beats per minute, you're adding years onto the life of the heart. So if you get it down into the 50s, just imagine you could add 10, 15 years onto the life of your heart. Plus you're increasing endorphins. Now that's what really enhances a calmer brain. And hence why I suggest don't take the energy drinks in the morning. Don't take the caffeine. Take a walk. Now, there's also some other things you can do, because if you're on that paleo diet, you're getting way too much protein, you're getting it from animal sources, which is not good, and you're also getting it cooked in ways that are not helpful. According to research published in Physiology and Behavior, the peer-reviewed journal, rats who consumed a diet rich in fat, that's your paleo diet, but not in protein or carbohydrate, experienced significant lower anxiety than their protein or carbohydrate diet counterparts. I should reverse that. When your diet has natural fats, like coconut oil or olive oil or avocados, then you have less anxiety. But if your fat comes with lots of protein, which come together as arachidonic acid in the fat from, let's say, a steak, then you're more likely to have anxiety. Another issue with high-protein diets is the release of cortisol. Now, this audience knows that cortisol is a stress hormone that causes weight, sleep, and behavioral issues. And a case in point is the study that discovered men who consume protein had an increase in cortisol levels. Think of all the bodybuilders. Think of all the police officers who feel that part of being this new militarized fighting machine is you got to pump it up, you got to be, you know, on the roids. And as a result, you're taking a lot of anabolics. Oh, you'll have the muscle. You also have an extremely distempered personality. Think of all the bodybuilders. Think of all the athletes who felt that they have to be bigger and stronger. You pay a price for that. Now, just think of a regular person taking in more protein from animal source than what you need. You pay a terrific price for that. So, those who are given a carbohydrate meal, I'm talking about complex carbohydrate, did not experience cortisol elevation. And as far as GABA is concerned, results from tests revealed that protein-rich diets contributed to a decrease in GABA activity and immune response. In contrast, long-term consumption of a plant-based diet heightened GABA activity and stronger immune system. And that was published in the journal Neuroscience. So even though protein can be problematic for GABA production, it doesn't mean that we need to give up everything else. You should be eating low glycemic fruits like berries. They're beneficial. Vegetables are beneficial. And then if you do find yourself a little irritable, out of sorts, just try some L-theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. It's been shown to boost GABA and encourage a state of relaxed mental alertness, along with reduced anxiety. The amino acid is found in green and black teas, as well as you can get 200 milligrams in a supplement. And inositol, that helps alleviate depression and anxiety by enhancing the ability of GABA to bind to receptors within the brain. Inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. And also another nutrient which activates GABA receptors is magnesium, 400 milligrams. And lastly, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, or P5P, and taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. They assist the enzyme glutamate decarbonylase convert glutamate from the diet into GABA. So there you have how lifestyle and simple supplementation can help get rid of a lot of the anxiety. Also, from Oregon State University, a good report came out showing that fatty and sugary foods, think of desserts, are linked to lower cognitive functions. That's not good. So a diet rich in fat, which is the average American diet, and sugar, could cause changes in the makeup of our gut bacteria, which in turn leads to loss of cognitive function. The new research published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuroscience investigated the impact of diets rich in sugar and fatty foods on brain functions. And led by Professor Kathleen Magnusson of Oregon State University, the research team found that when compared to a normal diet, in the experiment here, a high-fat diet, high sugar, saw changes in gut bacteria. Well, you're always going to see bad bacteria proliferate where you have sugar. That's what comes from that sugar. Quote, it's increasingly clear that our gut bacteria, our microbiota, can communicate with the human brain. Bacteria can release compounds that act as neurotransmitters, stimulate sensory nerves, or the immune system, and affect a wide range of biological functions. We've known for a while that too much fat and sugar are not good for you. This work suggests that fat and sugar are altering your healthy bacterial systems, and that's one of the reasons those foods aren't good for you. It's not just the food that could be influencing your brain, but an interaction between the food and the microbiological changes, end quote. So the takeaway message there is simple. Clean up your diet, get rid of the sugar, get rid of the fat, and it'll make all the difference in the world in your gut bacteria. And finally, the muscadine grapeseed oil can reduce obesity. This is from the University of Florida Institute for Food Sciences. Muscadine grapeseed oil supplies a form of vitamin E, giving scientists another clue to reducing obesity. And the oil may help mitigate the formation of new fat cells because it produces tocotrienol, an unsaturated form of vitamin E. This, according to Professor Marty Marshall, University of Florida Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition, quotes, thus, consuming foods made with muscadine grapeseed oil could curtail weight gain by reducing obesity. Good to know. So, eat the muscadine grapes. They're crunchy. The crunchiest of all grapes. They're delicious. But also get the oil if you're overweight and take a little bit. And this was published in the Journal of Food and Function. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to come back and share some insights on the environment in a moment. Please stay with us.
Hello, stranger. It seems so good to see you back again. How long has it been?
It seems like a mighty long time. Chupa, chupa, my baby, ooh.
It seems like a mighty long time. Oh,
nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Now, this is from Energy News, and this is just current. Quote, a toxic algae bloom spreading off the Pacific coast could be the largest one scientists have ever seen. Quote, it's definitely the largest bloom of this particular algae seen on the West Coast, possibly anywhere ever. End quote. That's from a professor of ocean sciences at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Told CBS News, currently what we're seeing is this large bloom taking place from about Santa Barbara all the way up to Alaska. We've been keeping track since the beginning of May, but the size of this bloom surprised even him. Quote, it's over such a large area, you typically don't see these blooms up in Alaska. They're having to deal with something they've not been used to dealing with. Now, what also is happening, it's threatening the salmon, and they're seeing all crustaceans affected and killing seabirds, sickening marine mammals in huge numbers, numbers that they've never seen before. So what could be causing this bloom? I believe that one of the possible answers is the unusual heat that is now being manifest in the Pacific Ocean. That's global warming, that's environmental degradation, that's changing the ecosystem. And by the way, for people weren't paying attention because you were focused on other issues. Just this week, the largest fire in American history occurred in Alaska, still is going on, spreading. 500,000 acres destroyed in one day. That's a huge amount of land in one 24-hour period, and it's growing. Millions of acres have been affected. So we're seeing more remarkable environmental effects than ever before. Now, I'm going to read you a letter that I have sent to Pope Francis. It is Saving the Planet One Meal at a Time. Pope Francis's encyclical, the Laudato Si, speaks not only on behalf of ardent environmental and social activists, but also for the protectors of animal rights and opponents of the horrendous conditions farm animals face before being slaughtered to the taste buds of the world's eaters, those who consume dead flesh. It is a clarion call not just to Catholics, but also to all citizens of the world to wake up to the destructive course humanity is embarking upon and the annihilation of the very infrastructure upon which human survival and the endurance of all other species depends. There is reason to feel optimistic that an international leader responsible for the spiritual direction of 1.2 billion Catholics would take this stance against the powers who are determined to alter and destroy life as we know it. By focusing on the many benefits of preserving our environment, ecology, and farmlands, and communities, and cultures, the Pope is pointing the way towards what should be done if he can make one further step. That is to adopt a fully vegetarian or vegan diet. Even if only 10% of Catholics were to follow this example and pursue a diet based upon organic and principally locally grown foods, there will be a substantial reduction in poverty, misery, and improved health. Not only would souls be saved, but so could lives. Going vegetarian honors the sacredness of other species and lessens the animal cruelty of factory farming. Stresses on the planet and environment will decline, including unregulated corporate pollution of the environment, acidification of the oceans, and weakening health of our bodies. There is no longer any substantial benefit for continuing a meat-based diet. According to a study from Harvard School of Public Health, red meat consumption shortens your lifespan. Grilled and charred meat has long been known to increase nitrosamine toxicity that has been repeatedly associated with a variety of cancers. A study from the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine reported that red meat and processed meats raise the risk of type 2 diabetes as much as 51%. UCLA discovered an association between meat consumption and Alzheimer's and dementia. And for women, meat consumption increases the risk of breast cancer. Particularly in the developed world, a meat-based diet has become the foundation of a pyramid upon which rest economic inequality, rural migration to urban centers, and poverty, near insurmountable environmental destruction and climate change, and the collapse of the planet's biodiversity. It was not without reason that Albert Einstein noted several decades ago, long before the measurable impact of greenhouse gas emission, that a vegetarian diet, quote, will increase chances for survival on Earth and would have a profound physical effect on the human temperament. In Einstein's estimation, this would lead not only to better human health, but also benefit how humans treat each other, to be kinder, more compassionate, and more caring towards those in the greatest need. The increase of industrial factory farms is therefore one of the greatest single obstacles to blinding people from the full societal and environmental consequences of continuing our carnivorous diet. The evidence of factory farms' immoral assault on the environment, on other animal species and human health is grotesque. Over 450 million tons of waste is emitted from the animal consumption industry. A very large adult cow can produce up to 65 pounds of solid excrement and 4 gallons of urine waste every day. Among the byproducts of livestock manure is nitrous oxide, which, according to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, accounts for 65% of its anthropogenic emissions. Due to an overabundance of livestock manure, nitrous oxide interferes with our cells' ability to utilize oxygen and therefore has been associated with programmed cell death, meaning the death of brain cells, and in particular in the brain's region associated with learning and memory. It also disrupts the body's ability to absorb vitamin B12, a critical nutrient for the myelin sheaths protecting neurons. Research has also associated excess nitrous oxide exposure with slower production of bone marrow and of an increase in heart attacks. Nitrous oxide is also a leading cause behind the death of our rivers, lakes, and tributaries flowing into the oceans. Throughout the United States, untreated animal waste is destroying water resources and renewable aquifers fed by groundwater. Tens of millions of gallons of manure waste contaminated North Carolina's New River in the mid-1990s, leading to the death of over 10 million fish from one spill. Since nitrous oxide depletes oxygen, runoffs contribute to algae blooms in dead zones that are threatening sea life. According to a World Watch report, factory farms and the vast areas of forest that have been leveled for animal grazing may account for 51% of all human-related greenhouse gas emissions, far more than the fossil fuel industry. 65% of the world's deforestation was for increasing livestock ranching and grazing. 31% was for large industrial agriculture to displace more sustainable traditional farming methods. On average, a single cow will release 155 to 265 pounds of methane gas annually. Although methane has a shorter lifespan in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, it has a greater capacity to trap radiation. According to the Environmental Defense Fund, methane is 84 times more potent than CO2, making it the most serious greenhouse emission. The increase of anthropogenic methane emissions, coupled with the thawing of frozen tundra, releasing vast quantities of methane, is rapidly increasing global warming and having a non-reversible impact upon the climate. Today, factory farms account for approximately 37% of methane emissions and is likely greater than emissions from oil and gas industries combined. In short, factory farms are an ecological disaster. Grass-fed cattle and free-range chickens are neither a solution. To the contrary, the organic industry impacts global warming 20% more than standard industry chicken farms. And grass-fed cattle has contributed to the destruction of millions of acres in Latin America, particularly in Brazil, and releases more methane than cattle-fed common feedstock grains. For this reason, forsaking consumption of all meat products is the only solution. Unfortunately, factory farms are increasing. Between 2002 and 2012, large factory farms rose by 20%, with 28 million separate units. Dairy cows rose 121%, broiler chickens 80%, and hog farms 37% during the same period. According to Food and Water Watch, one fundamental reason for livestock increase is regulation failures that have led to overproduction. In addition to economic synergy existing between the meat industry and the agrochemical industry, with more genetically modified crops carpeting the U.S. farmlands, each industry serves the other's interest in a hidden monopolistic scheme, and Monsanto leads the way in keeping the factory farm industry alive. Today, the majority of Monsanto's GMO soybean and corn is grown for animal feed and biofuels. The only incentive behind the factory farm industry is profit, even at the cost of environmental catastrophe. Between 1995 and 2012, American taxpayers subsidized large factory farms to the tune of $200 $192 billion, and only 10% of farms receive 75% of subsidies. 62% did not receive any subsidies, and these are the smaller family farm operations who rely upon sustainable agriculture. Why would livestock firms be subsidized? Because of the massive amount of grains consumed from big agriculture. Moreover, large livestock operations receive tax dollars to cover crop insurance. As of 2012, this amounted to $15.8 billion. Over $1.2 billion has been spent on lobbying federal legislators to keep this Ponzi scheme alive. There is simply too much revenue at stake for the oligarchs to retreat on moral grounds. Legislative reform is also unlikely to make a crucial dent to lessen factory farms' impact upon the environment. There is simply too much livestock and too many people willing to devour it. In 2014, the World Bank released a report that calculated global poverty and declined half during the past 20 years. This ushered a false hope that a global war on poverty was being won. However, the falsity was that the report relied upon a baseline figure of $1.25 for its calculation. A subsequent report by the Asian Development Bank suggested that the way poverty is measured today is completely obsolete. Given the rise in the cost of living and the essential resources to survive, the baseline figure must be increased to $1.75. When calculated realistically, global poverty skyrockets and proves the war on poverty has been a dismal failure. The meat and big agricultural industries pushing genetically modified crops are largely to blame, particularly in rural, undeveloped regions. Today, about 70% of the world's poor live in rural areas where farming is the primary source of income. Rural farmers account for 60% of the world's population. In a highly industrialized country like the U.S., with huge monopolistic farms, only 2% of Americans are farmers. Factory farms, whether for the raising of livestock or animal feed, on huge petrochemical farms, continue to threaten communities and drive more people into poverty. Land that can be better used to feed the developing world is increasingly being usurped by Western corporations to keep the animal death machine running. Small generational farms are forced off their land and destined to a life of unemployment and impoverishment. The Pew Commission has stated that factory farms destroy the social fabric of communities and local economies. The private food and animal industries are resource parasites that waste vast amounts of natural resources, particularly water, to keep large industrial farms operative. In turn, water resources are contaminated with toxic pesticides and fertilizers and manures, which increase waste, environmental and human health risks, and contributes to irreplaceable soil depletion. The rape of the land not only drives people into poverty, but makes the land unlivable for future generations because it can only sustain itself by adding more and more toxins in pillaging more and more resources. The Pope acknowledges this crisis in his encyclical because for the indigenous farmer, he says, quote, land is not a commodity but rather a gift from God and from their ancestors who rest here, a sacred space with which they need to interact if they are to maintain their identity and values, end quote. The fundamental cause behind the numerous crises humanity faces is being technologically driven. The release of increasing toxic pesticides and herbicides, chemical fertilizers, and unsafe genetically modified crops and genetically modified trees, and drugs and antibiotics and synthetic growth hormones, all to speed up animal natural metabolisms to reach maturity faster. Factory farms rely more on technology than labor. Pope Francis acknowledges this threat when he says, quote, a concentration of productive land in the hands of the few forces small producers from being forced off their fields and end up in the miserable urban settlements. For this reason, local communities are decimated and residents are forced into exile as migrants. In poor developing countries where factory farms are thriving, money leaves the region to fill the bank accounts of large multinational corporations rather than being recirculated within the rural farming communities. With the future of sustainable living becoming ever more fragile, there is a moral imperative for institutions, academics, and business leaders and individuals to divest their financial interests in the livestock industry. Yet this will not guarantee a reduction in meat production unless a global-wide initiative to encourage people to adopt vegetarian and vegan lifestyles is launched to weaken the supply and demand and force private industry to scale back. For this reason, a meat-based diet supports the worst of the capitalist edifice financing factory farming and the global elite who are determined to keep it thriving in order to benefit from environmental degradation and human suffering. Recently, when I was lecturing at the UN on Earth Day, I stated, what does it mean to be in an audience filled with environmental activists when you're going to go out and eat meat? How, then, is that helping the environment in the larger issue? The milk, the cheese, the dairy, anything from an animal causes the environment to be further degraded. Shouldn't we, as environmentalists, become vegans and stewards of the land and respect and honor the life of the animals? That was met with silence. As long as there is natural land available to be ravaged by private corporations to keep the death machine spewing forth meat or its byproducts for consumption, more and more rural families, women and children, and entire cultures will be reduced to poverty. The equation that unites meat as a diet, global warming, corporate profits, and rising poverty is clear. For this reason, the food industry is determined to use whatever devious and fraudulent means at its disposal to hold its own. This includes the publication of duplicitous science, which is now endemic to multinational corporations in the pharmaceutical, chemical-based agriculture, food and animal industries. They lie constantly, and they can purchase for the right price those with the greatest academic pedigrees, entire departments at universities, and they fund hundreds of academic or supposedly science-based centers that then send forth individuals to do their bidding. When a nation deliberates on what is right, what is the correct and humane thing to do, it inevitably frames its answers in the context of what is best for that nation to leverage an advantage over others. It is not about preserving the planet's environment or improving people's health. It is not about the earth as home, as Pope Francis states. What is particularly insidious and criminal are the economic elite who benefit financially from this holocaust of land and sea life. Pope Francis not only warns about the immorality that fuels free market capitalism, but also targets the agro-industrial complex and the oil and gas industries as the greatest threats to life on the planet. He is aligned with the food activists who oppose companies like Monsanto and DuPont and who wish to dominate global food security and alter the very fabric of plant and animal life for greed and profit. In conclusion, unlike his predecessors, Pope Francis has adopted a humble and simple lifestyle that prefers less over more. His meals consist primarily of vegetables, salads, fruits, and a glass of wine, and the occasional skinned or baked chicken. With the release of the encyclical and the Pope's inevitable soul-searching and pondering of the state of our planet's condition, we may hope that the Pope will embrace a full vegan lifestyle to serve as an exemplar for all Catholics and his non-Catholic admirers. The Pope has the capacity, more than any other person on the planet, to set the example. And if he chooses to set the example, and then with his charm, his warmth, and his determinism, imagine the impact that will have. I am optimistic. That is a letter to the Pope from Richard Gell and myself. It is posted on our website, progressiveradionetwork.com or prn.fm. Share it. and be the person that takes the lead in saving the planet. I'm optimistic we can do this. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Our program, for those listening all over the world, is going to run late today because the station manager, Berthold Reimers, of our sister station, WBAI New York, asked, would I do some fundraising today? And I started in the last hour, and he asked, could I do a little pitch now? And the reason is simple, because the station is finding itself in a challenged position financially. It's not able to pay its bills. It's not able to pay for the premiums. And when this happened in April, we did a fundraiser, and we were able to pay for, I think it was around 1,000 premiums. The station got the money. We paid the bills. We're going to have to do that again if people expect to get their premiums. All the people get all the premiums. Some premiums have gone out, and we appreciate that, but there's just no money left. By the way, this is also true at KPFK, where the station manager has notified people out there they don't have the money for their premiums. But there's no irony about any of the stations having a hard time paying for their premiums because there's no introspection. There's no real group of professionals saying, what should we do? So we do what we can. And so I'm going to do a little pitch now, but then I'm extending the program into the next hour, because I have a very important piece I want to play for you from ABC Australia that was then taken off. You can't find it anywhere. It was scrubbed because it gave an honest look by a medical doctor, board-certified physician, not a holistic doctor, and their investigative team on statin drugs and cholesterol. Boy, did they boil it down. And almost everyone you hear, these are medical doctors, board certified, and professors. These are top people, though they're not always identified. You'll hear the voices. Also, I'm going to be hiring 6 people to do work here on Sunday. This is for Sunday, and 6 people on Monday. You'll be paid, but you have to have experience in like carpentry and painting. And if you don't call. If you do, then we got a lot of work because we're intending to finish our studio, have it up and running, invite people in as of Tuesday. You can call 646-926-5422, but this is for Sunday, actually tomorrow, Friday, Sunday, and Monday, because we're going to get it done, almost there. And now I'll continue tomorrow with I will be out live on the air tomorrow with our discussions, but I'm going to talk about the Greek debt crisis tomorrow. I'm going to lay out a story you have not heard anywhere in the American media. It'll recast the entire dynamic of this in a different light when you see who actually got this $360 billion. It was not the Greek government or the Greek people. I'll show you when they talk about repaying the debt. What debt? The Greeks didn't get this debt. Oh, but they did through a very clever Goldman Sachs scheme. I believe that Goldman Sachs should be shamed, including its current CEO, because he was the one that orchestrated. I'll tell you the scheme, the scam of how they bankrupted the Greek people. And someone should stand outside of Goldman Sachs' office with a sign that says, how many Greeks committed suicide so you could make the profit on the derivative scheme that you did with Greece? I don't think that anyone working at Goldman Sachs will ever have a heart attack, because I don't think there's one in their body. I'll deal with that tomorrow. But now just a few moments to help our station WBAI in New York. And by the way, we raised $4,000 in 15 minutes. So that helped pay a lot of premiums. Hopefully we can do the same now. Here's what we're going to do. It's going to be very condensed. I'm taking the third week of August to have a sleepaway retreat for BAI's audience. Swimming in one of the most mineral-rich waters in America, combined with the meditation with nature, wonderful little animals that are there to love and hug and pet, watching nature and the eagles and the swans, having classes where you'll learn gourmet food, vegan, everything's vegan and gluten-free, a presentation, being given plates of food one serving at a time, done the way that people in Italy have historically done it, no putting it all on one plate, cooking classes, juicing classes, wheatgrass, lemon juice, and ginger in the morning, smoothies that I personally make. That's what I'm making. I make them, no one else. I get up at 4 and I make everyone their smoothie with the almond butters and the different nut butters and the vegetable protein and all the phytonutrients and the coconut and the rice milk. And it's phenomenal. That's what I eat every morning. You will too. Great meal in the afternoon, magnificent dessert in the evening. And hopefully I'm trying to get someone to come down who is, in my opinion, one of the greatest sugar-free chefs in America. We have several chefs coming. But there's one more I want, so we have a whole team of chefs. You're going to walk by hundreds of trays of food growing. That food's been planted as of now, microgreens and sprouts and wheatgrass, and we're going to be juicing all day long, juices all day long, classes all day long, counseling all day long. You've got it all, yoga, meditation, in one of the most beautiful environments in the South, not upstate New York. And here, real quick, are the people's comments from the one in April, unrehearsed. They just come in, and I just say, just tell the people what you experienced. Here's what they experienced.
My name is Joyce, and I have just finished a two-week stay at Gary's retreat. And I can't really say what this has meant to me because I don't even know yet. But I know that it's totally turned my life around. It's been the most incredible experience of my life for a lot of reasons. I came down here as a stage 4 cancer patient ready to go into hospice. And I'm walking out of here, literally walking without a cane, without anything to help me, and feeling better than I felt in a year, 3 years. And I'm so grateful, so incredibly grateful that I've had this time to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I literally was unable to walk without some type of aid when I came here. And within 3 days, I'd put the cane down and I was walking and sort of power walking, nothing like what they do down here, but I was doing it in the best way that I could. So I cannot say enough, and I don't even expect people to believe what I'm saying because it seems so phenomenal that I would have a breast tumor that would go down almost 2/3 while I'm here because of the attention, because of the energy, because of everything here. I go home a different person, literally go home a different person. So I can only say thank you to everyone here, to all the people that have played a role in this. I sort of came here against my better judgment, not believing that anything could really make that much of a difference. And knowing that if I had 2 months left to live, that at least maybe Gary Null could help me make the best of those 2 months. And I go back fully charged and ready to go to work and continue where I left off 3 years ago. I was a registered nurse for 40 years. And one of the things that I did was I was a certified chemo nurse, chemotherapy nurse, and worked a lot in heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant. But my belief in chemotherapy was that all my patients that had had chemotherapy were dead, and I was not going to take it. So I went in the natural route. I had 3 breast tumors initially 3 years ago that metastasized into bone cancer, liver cancer, and spinal cancer. And at this point, I don't feel that there is any pain there like I was having. I was having excruciating bone pain for which I was taking narcotics for. And now that is gone. And so I am just blessed to have been given this opportunity and every person here that has made this happen. I only wish I could make it happen for other people so they can benefit from this also.
Hi, my name is William, and I came down to Gary's retreat feeling stressed. I guess some of the normal general problems everybody has, and trying to get kind of back on track. And all I can say is what a wonderful atmosphere to de-stress. I feel like I've been helped immensely. It's just made a good impact on me, validated some things I wasn't sure about. And coincidentally, I have a mass or tumor on my back, and I didn't really come down here for that. And I had some energy work done, and I can't believe it. It seems like it's gone down at least one half. And I know that sounds unbelievable, but it's unbelievable to me also. And I don't know. It's just very informative, very positive. I don't know. I feel very invigorated. I'm just so glad I came, really. I had no idea it was going to be like this and I was going to feel like this.
My name is Gemma, and I have been a natural health care practitioner for over 30 years. I came here because this is a time in my life for a new beginning for me. And this was the very best decision I could ever make. Everyone on the staff is supportive and loving and very constructive. The environment is so balanced and loving and nurturing. And through Gary's guidance, I learned to go in and allow nature to heal me. And I'm just very grateful for this opportunity. Everything is just so lovely and pristine and balanced. But I'm taking much with me, and I know that I'm capable of a new beginning in my life.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I'm finishing off a week at Gary Null's beautiful retreat. And I have to say, it is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. The energy is amazing, and it's a place where you can really work on every aspect, your emotional, your spiritual, your health, your well-being. Everyone here is so supportive and loving. And I don't know, I just think I'm vibrating in a whole different energy now. I can go deeper into my meditations. I feel much lighter and much more energetic than when I came here. And I consider myself in fairly good physical condition. I think I'm on the path of taking care of myself. And I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to come here. It's just a blissful experience. You can't really describe how you feel. Just the whole place is just filled with this fabulous energy. And just walking the terrain is amazing. And then having the wonderful nutrition that he provides. I mean, as I say, I feel like I've accomplished something for my body, mind, and spirit. And I'm grateful to have been here.
Hello. My name is Barbara, and I was raised by Irish immigrant parents that grew up on small farms in Ireland. And my husband was raised the same way. And the reason I'm saying that is because we learned to eat healthy, and we always did. And the thing was that we worked so hard. And then I started taking care of my mother and my aunt and my uncle until they passed away, and my job seemed to be taking care of people. So to all those people out there who take care of people, just know that you can come to a place and just completely relax and enjoy it. My husband, the reason why I came here was because my husband developed mild Parkinson's. It is absolutely spectacular here. I was thrilled when I saw everything. It is absolutely spectacular. We have absolutely fantastic food. The food and the preparation of the food and the staff that makes the food are so loving and so kind. And everybody here showed us so much love and kindness. And that's exactly what we needed while we were here. My husband is getting stronger and stronger all the time. And he's now on the road to recovery because he's starting to walk a little, take steps a bit bigger. And he's also starting to hold himself a little better. And we're going to keep up the good eating and we're going to keep up our calmness. So now I'm completely relaxed, and it's the first time in many, many years that I can say I'm relaxed. Thank you, Gary.
My name is Sherry, and Gary has saved my life, really.
Hi, my name is Anne.
Those are just some of the people, and that's their experiences. The whole goal of the exercise is to help people regain a sense of their authenticity. And letting nature help you in that journey is what's crucial. It's not for everyone. We had about three people who, quite simply, didn't benefit at all. They came angry, they left angry. But for 98% of the people, they came open and they left changed. Now, to know is this right for you or not, because it's not for everyone. If you're basically a highly judgmental, reactive person, it's not for you. There are other places. In fact, we could recommend some places. But for people who really want to detoxify, de-stress in a positive mindset, it could be it. Now, here's something before I go to Luann. The five most common regrets the dying have. This is from PreventDisease.com from Bonnie Ware. Quote, priorities become crystal clear when people know their days are numbered. Bonnie Ware realized while working with terminally ill patients, and here are the five that people say at the end of life, and because I work with only terminally ill people, I've had this feedback so many times. SFU, Luann. One, I wished I'd the courage to live a life true to myself, not to the life of others expected of me. Two, I wished I didn't work so hard. Three, I wished I had the courage to express my feelings. Four, I wished I stayed in touch with my friends. And five, I wished I had let myself be happier. Well, all of those apply to the people you just heard. They couldn't have had the experiences they had if they held on to their anger, their pain, their resentment. They had to come back to the spiritual self for these things to manifest. So that is one of the things we do. Luann, give them your number for people who'd like to come.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
And if it's not for the people, you'll give them some suggestions of other places that might better align them with their needs.
Right? Yes, places that love to have nasty people.
Negative people.
Yes.
Hell.
They're out there, those places.
All of it. Oh, are you telling me?
You pay extra for that.
Yes.
You sleep in bunk beds with 17 other people in the room and share bathrooms.
And that's only $10,000.
You know, Gary, when I came to your retreat 20 years ago, I had all those things that you just rattled off. I was a workaholic. I was angry. I was sick. I never felt good. I never had time for my friends and family, and I just wasn't happy. But I was very successful. And after the retreat, I actually fired myself from my job as a nurse administrator. And ever since then, I have held those values, those new values that I walked away with, very close to my heart. And I live them every day. I've never been happier. I've never been healthier. And it's life transforming if you allow it to be.
You have to allow it. No one can force you to be happy. No one can force you to surrender your anger and rage. But if you think you can be happy and healthy and hold on to that rage, you can't. You can't be healthy if you're not happy. And that's the missing equivalent of what we're not doing in our society. Give the number one more time.
Yes, it's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Leave a message for me. Keep it brief, your name and number, and I'll call you right back.
Okay, and again, the whole object of this exercise, because I was going to be in Europe on a vacation with my daughter, but we're going to do that the last week, and so I'm sacrificing this week to help the station because we can pay premiums. We will pay the premiums. We'll get them out. Our goal is 1,000 to 2,000 premiums paid for and then sent out so the station can not be burdened by having to not have the money to pay premiums, which now it can't. Okay? Now, to all the stations carrying us, we're going to continue, and so you have your full 55 minutes. For those who are only on for this part, we thank you for listening. And also, Utrice Lee will be starting delayed on her program today because we're going to play this segment. Now, I want you to hear something you will not hear in American media on cholesterol and statin drugs. This could be life-saving. Please listen up to the special investigative report by an Orthodox medical doctor from ABC Australia that has been scrubbed from all their websites. You can't find this anywhere. They managed to get it aired once, and then that was it. It was buried. Listen up.
We've been told that medications to lower cholesterol will save lives.
We repeatedly hear from patients that their doctors tell them, if you don't take this, you will die.
Over 40 million people worldwide take drugs to lower their cholesterol. But now there's evidence that the majority of them won't benefit.
None of those people are less likely to die.
I speak to doctors accusing the drug companies of distorting the evidence about the drug's side effects.
Of course they're going to try to minimize the adverse events because that will increase the sales of their drugs.
In its effect, it's certainly scientific fraud, and in its effect, it's organized crime.
So how do these drugs work, and are they really safe? I've come to the United States to investigate how drugs to lower cholesterol came to be the most widely prescribed drugs in the history of medicine. The 80s saw the debut of a new weapon in the battle against heart disease, a novel class of drugs called statins that lowered cholesterol like no other medication before them.
They were heralded as nirvana, the next great thing, because all of a sudden now you're getting 30 to 40% reduction with statins, which was huge. And this was great news to the people who were pushing the cholesterol theory because they said, aha, now we don't have to settle for these piddling little amounts anymore. We can really show how important cholesterol is by knocking it way down.
Medical information comes along that says you may need to get...
In the U.S., influential TV ads like this use popular actors to boast the enormous potential of these drugs.
Crestor, along with diet, can lower bad cholesterol by up to 52%.
But the reality is, lowering your cholesterol with medication doesn't guarantee you won't have a heart attack.
The marketing concentrates on the fact that you can lower your cholesterol as if that was the end in itself, which it is not. Cholesterol is just a lab number. You know, who cares about lowering cholesterol unless it actually translates into a benefit to patients?
Over the decades, drug companies have had an enormous vested interest in statin drugs.
It's the most profitable group of drugs in the history of the world. Something like 15 to 25 billion with a B dollars per year spent on these drugs. So that's higher than the gross national product of many countries around the world.
Lipitor is the best-selling drug in history. So in terms of costs, total sales of Lipitor have been in the range of $140 billion since it came on the market in 1996.
Statins work by disabling a critical step early in the formation of cholesterol.
there's a pathway that produces cholesterol in the body. You can think of it like a tree. So we have decided collectively that one of the branches of this tree is bad, meaning cholesterol. So we've decided that the best way to get rid of that branch is to cut the tree off at the root.
Statins inhibit this enzyme, which is also required for essential molecules like coenzyme Q10. Nutritionist Dr. Johnny Bowden says CoQ10 is essential for optimal heart muscle function.
This is partly, we believe, why so many side effects have to do with lack of energy, muscle pain, because coenzyme Q10 is so vital. So what's the irony of giving people a drug to reduce something that probably doesn't even have that much to do with heart disease that also reduces one of the molecules that's most necessary for heart health? How insane is that?
It's assumed that cholesterol is a toxic substance in your body, and getting it as low as you can is a good thing. Well, cholesterol is the organic molecule that's most common in your brain by weight. It's in every cell wall. It's the precursor of many of the hormones in our bodies. It's an enormously complex molecule. And to think that you can radically pull this out of the body and not have consequences is just, it's ridiculous. It's such bad science.
It's been about 30 years since statins were first introduced as the new blockbuster drug in heart disease, and millions of people around the world are being prescribed these medications. But many are concerned that the benefits of these drugs have been grossly exaggerated. Professor Rita Redberg is a world-renowned cardiologist. She says barring a genetic condition, the only people who live longer by taking a statin are those that have already had a heart attack or stroke.
Valve's working great.
That's good.
And of them, only a very small number will benefit.
One or two people in 100 will benefit from taking a statin. What people don't understand is that means the other 98 will get no benefit at all. It's not going to reduce their chance of dying.
But this hasn't limited their use. These drugs are now being widely prescribed to relatively healthy people, those without diagnosed heart disease. And Dr. Redberg warns most of them won't benefit.
For healthy people, even people that have a lot of risk factors, so they might have high blood pressure, they might smoke, they might have diabetes, the data is not there to suggest that those people are better off taking a statin. No, I don't think it's a wonder drug.
But Dr. David Sullivan disagrees. He says all risk factors should be considered equally, including cholesterol.
If you want to mount these arguments about not treating the cholesterol, you've got to take the responsibility of saying it's not necessary to treat these other risk factors either. I would certainly encourage people who are considering cessation of treatment for perceived side effects and so forth to discuss it with their doctor.
In 2012, there was an interesting turn of events. The CTT collaboration, a highly regarded group of researchers, reanalyzed all of the old data with different methods and concluded that statins were effective for the wider population. The report was subject to harsh criticism, but it's still the data that many cardiologists turn to. The media jumped on board and reported that everyone over the age of 50 should be taking a statin to reduce their risk of heart disease, even if you had normal cholesterol. But Professor Redberg says there's a downside.
None of those people are less likely to die. So you can take a statin for many, many years and you're just as likely to die as if you had not taken a statin.
Unless you've already been diagnosed with heart disease, then taking a statin won't help you live longer. It may reduce your risk of a cardiovascular event, but it may also increase your risk of developing something else, like diabetes. Either way, taking a statin won't extend your lifespan. Dr. Abramson says cardiologists are so focused on how these drugs prevent blood vessel disease, they often overlook the other problems caused by statins.
People are more than their cardiovascular system. And what we really want to do is improve people's overall health, longevity, and their risk of serious illness. If you look at overall health, we haven't done anything for them. Now, do people want to take a statin to trade one cardiovascular event for some other very serious illness, in other words, no net benefit, and expose themselves to the risk of harm from the statins? Do you want to do that? I think it's a bad deal. If somebody has a particular fear of heart disease and says, look, I don't care if I get diabetes. I don't care if I have muscle symptoms. I don't care if I can't exercise the way I want to exercise. I do not want to have heart disease. Fine, take a statin. But understand that that's why you're taking a statin, not because it's going to improve your overall health.
Cardiologist Dr. Ernest Curtis says the absolute benefit of statins is so minor that it's unlikely to be because of their ability to lower cholesterol. He says statins probably work through other mechanisms.
It seems very likely that the amount of reduction that they saw with the statin agents could easily be due to its effect on the blood clotting and possibly even the anti-inflammatory effect and have nothing to do with the cholesterol.
Dr. Gallom has scrutinized the data, and she's even more skeptical about the value of these drugs, especially in women.
Right now, the evidence has not supported benefit to women, even if they have heart disease, in terms of mortality and all-cause morbidity. It has not shown benefit to elderly, even if they have heart disease. In fact, in the 4S trial, there was a 12% increase in mortality in the women in that group who were assigned to statin rather than placebo. So the evidence really doesn't support that the benefit is the same for women and for men. And on top of that, women are at higher risk of complications from statins.
Should women take cholesterol-lowering medication?
In general, no. Now, there may be exceptions. Medicine actually does have an element of art. And if women are from a family with severe familial hyperlipidemia, where a lot of people are dying from heart disease in their 30s and 40s, that's a group where I would say there is an art.
There are now calls for patients to give written consent before taking a statin.
If you do plan to give statins to women, to elderly, to people at low risk, they should sign a consent form saying they understand that they're receiving a drug that will not extend their life, but will only shift the cause of death. I think patients have a right to know that before they agreed to take on a medication.
The National Heart Foundation of Australia agrees that people are being prescribed statins unnecessarily.
I would agree that there are people in Australia today who are being treated for cholesterol where their cardiovascular risk is not high, and you would have to question whether they should in fact actually be on that.
A report estimated around 75% of people taking statins are in the low to moderate risk category. And according to these researchers, that means up to 30 million people are taking a drug that won't offer them the benefit of living any longer.
My doctor pointed out that my cholesterol levels were high and I should take some sort of medication to reduce the cholesterol level.
There was nothing wrong with Edward's health, apart from his high cholesterol. He took his doctor's advice and began taking a statin.
After about 2 weeks, I was having a difficult time walking in the daytime, and at night I had trouble sleeping. My legs ached. I was definitely experiencing a memory loss. I didn't feel that I could recall things as clearly as I did before I was taking the statin. Mm.
Statins have a long list of side effects like muscle weakness, memory loss, and in rare cases, a potentially fatal condition called rhabdomyolysis, where muscles break down and cause kidney failure. Edward decided to stop taking his medication.
I start feeling better after about 3 weeks to maybe a month afterwards.
How long did it take for you to get 100% improvement?
100% better took, from the time I stopped taking the statins, took 6 months.
They feel like they're in a fog, they can't get out of their chair, side effects that go away when they've stopped their statins. And I have patients come in and tell me they'd rather be dead than keep taking the statin.
Some of them tell us that their doctors fire them as patients if they discontinue their statins, which I really wonder about the ethics of.
out of the
bed. Some of the people that we hear from also say that their doctor didn't believe them, that their problem couldn't be due to statins, and based on how patients perceive it, badger or bully them into resuming or continuing the medication. That's not an acceptable way for medicine as a system to be run.
But Dr. Sullivan says it's possible that patients talk themselves into...
That's just part of an original investigative report by Australia, ABC, and the medical doctor heading it. Could you imagine the consequences to the pharmaceutical industry, to all the physicians who've been routinely giving statin drugs, if that were played in prime time in the United States? Well, you don't have to worry about that. You can't find it anywhere. It is posted on our website, and that's why I want you to hear it. The fraud of statins, the fraud of lowering cholesterol is the only, is the heart of heart disease, which it is not. I want you to hear a different perspective. That's all the time we have. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Let's stay together. So